Welcome to the Zur Institute LLC audio recording on home-based therapy, or what is also called in-home therapy or home visits. I am your host, Nola Nordmarken, MFT. In this program, I will be interviewing Dr. Ofer Zur on his views and understanding of home-based therapy. This recording is part of an online course on home-based therapy by the Zur Institute at www.zurinstitute.com. I myself am a marriage and family therapist in Southern California with practices in Santa Monica and Pasadena. I have co-authored several articles with Dr. Zur, including critique of the DSM, home office practice, touch and psychotherapy, and the professional will. Ofer Zur is a licensed psychologist, fellow American of the Psychological Association, instructor, lecturer, ethics consultant, and expert witness in private practice in Sonoma, California. He has been in practice for over 20 years and is director of the Zur Institute, LLC at, again, www.zurinstitute.com, which offers over 130 innovative and challenging online...
Actually, by now, it's 140.
Oh, thank you for changing that number for me. Over 140 innovative and challenging online continuing education courses for psychologists, counselors, social workers, nurses, and other mental health practitioners. Dr. Zur is most known for his efforts to humanize the field of psychotherapy and counseling and as a fierce advocate of appropriate and flexible application of therapeutic boundaries. Dr. Zur has been a visionary in the field. In the 1980s, warning us about the potential problems with managed care, and he has taught many of us how to practice outside managed care on a free-for-service basis. In the 1990s, he advocated strongly for humanizing the field of psychotherapy and counseling and taught us how to apply therapeutic boundaries with flexibility and care rather than rigidity and fear. In 2002, he saw HIPAA coming our way and wrote the HIPAA Compliance Kit. These days, he has shifted his attention to telehealth or telemental health, which he views as one of the most important developments in our field of psychotherapy and counseling. In this unique audio, Dr. Zur will explore the issues and complexities involved in home-based therapy. So let's start. May I call you Ofer?
Of course.
Ofer, how would you define or what would you say is included in home visits?
I mean, the definition of home-based therapy is very simple. It's when the therapist, counselors, social workers conduct the clinical assessment, evaluation, treatment in the home of the client. The names that have been used interchangeably, that we'll be using interchangeably in this interview as well, will be home-based therapy, in-home therapy, or home visit. So all three are really referring to the same idea or the same concept. Traditionally, kind of we're looking back, it started with two main aspects of our field. Family therapist in the 60s and 70s had a focus on home therapy, saw it as special advantage of conducting therapy in the context of when therapy life takes place. The second one was the evaluation of children and family, again, evaluating it in context. While the former, we don't hear as much, even though we see it still happening sometimes in European, Australian, and other parts of the world. The child assessment, evaluation, treatment, interventions happening in large numbers in the in-home therapy.
What are some of the other populations that are seen in in-home therapy?
There are many kind of populations that can benefit highly from in-home therapy. let's start kind of what kind of mental health condition may be conducive to in-home therapy. Obviously, those with agoraphobia or social anxiety will either be benefit from telehealth or from in-home therapy. Those with contamination phobia or other paranoid ideations that stops them from leaving the house. Some people with developmental disabilities, those with hoarding, and sometimes those with depression, agoraphobia, social anxiety, sometimes suicidality can also highly benefit, or even drug abuse. This would be kind of the mental health type conditions that situations disorders that would be conducive to in-home therapy. Then there are array of evaluations and education that takes in the home, and primarily it's child abuse, neglect, and issues of child safety. Pre and post adoption issues often needs to be addressed within the home to see what context the child lives or may live. Placement issues, of course, needs to be assessed in the home. Sometimes drug abuse evaluation, nutrition and cooking education cannot really happen in the office. And parenting education, sometimes hands-on parenting education should be taking place in the home. Then there are physical or medical conditions that may bound people to the home. It may be severe autistic, homebound elderly, paraplegic, patients with infectious disease, late stages of age or HIV, STD evaluation, and of course those are terminally ill and dying. A hospice type kind of intervention will not happen in our nice offices or not nice offices. Those who are with severe cases of dementia or Alzheimer or any other disabilities that makes people be homebound. Then there are cultural components that may direct some us for some populations that prefer a home visit. For example, the American Indians, they have high stigma regarding mental health treatment by Western ways, because many American Indians have their own traditional way of dealing with difficulties, mental, spiritual. They look at the mental primarily spiritual. So home visit with American Indians and other minorities sometimes may be helpful. And then some people just don't have the funds or are not organized enough. You can't get family of seven people into the office, but you can may get perhaps five out of seven at home. And so some people cannot leave the children at home or cannot leave a family member at home who is sick or need constant attention. So there are numerous areas that will be much more effectively dealt in the home, or any sometimes the only way to be dealt with is by a home visit. So all this kind of ideas that you hear in ethics workshop of don't leave the office are kind of idiotic and impractical and out of touch with many populations that are cited above.
And really limits the benefits to the client.
Absolutely, if we're not flexible. Now, some of these things maybe start being treated by telehealth. We will not cover this one in our interview today, but we just need to keep it in mind.
What would you say are the most important advantages of therapists providing services within the home, just within the general living environment of the client?
Sometimes it's more comfortable for the clients to be seen on their turf. And for therapists, for social workers, for MFTs, counselors, psychologists, we can treat people in the patient's environment, and we can see really what is the condition, where do the children sleep, are there 53 cats in the house, what's the sanitation situation, a neighborhood, so we can really assess and intervene in context in a way that perhaps we won't be able or often we can't do in our offices because we just don't have the picture of where and we don't understand the context of the lives of our clients, and we are ineffective in trying to imagine it or just to rely on clients' report in some situation. Then the other benefits are the advantages that it can cut emergency room and hospitalization costs, because you can see things coming. You can intervene before a full-fledged crisis is occurring. And so this is kind of the main advantages. I would say kind of the context would be probably one of the most important ones.
I'd like to address the issue of boundaries in home visits. I'm sure that it must be very unique and complex in the issues that are related to this topic. Could you address that issue, please?
Oh my goodness, this is huge issues. Let me kind of start with a general, and then perhaps you can guide me a little bit about kind of what we want to focus on this interview. In general, the home visit present, as you just mentioned, a complex set of boundaries. Unlike the office where there's a clock beginning and the end, and furniture and soundproofing, home visits provide it is unpredictable kind of a setting, and much more flexibility and unpredictability of the setting create a whole slew of boundaries. I'm not sure where would you like me to start? Perhaps you can guide me on that.
Well, I think when I consider that, the one that seems most challenging, and you may want to address this first or later in your answer, but it has to do with how the power distribution might be affected in the relationship. Does that fit here, or would it fit?
No, under boundaries, perhaps I'll talk more about space and role and this kind of issue. So let me kind of start with the space.
Okay.
Space is a boundary issue, and in the office, we know where treatment takes place. It takes place in our office. And whether we work for the Department of Mental Health or work for ourselves, it takes place in our office. But in the house, is it in the living room, in the bedroom, on the porch? Do we go to the backyard because the house is so stinky, or there are weapons in the house and dogs in the house, or dirt in the house, or germs in the house, or lice in the house? Do we just go to the nearby trail? And so where therapy takes place is much more fluid and unexpected sometimes in the home office. The second issues of boundaries that we can talk about, and we can definitely talk about power later on because it's a very important issue, but let's kind of cover the boundaries first, if it's okay with you.
Sure.
The role is much more complex in the home-based therapy, and because is a therapist, is a clinician, but it's also, is he or she our guests? Because sometimes they're being treated as a guest. It's a kind of helping with parenting. The therapist refuse to eat or to drink coffee or tea because when you're being offered. So sometimes it's much more small talk or informal conversation in the home base. Sometimes the therapist may take a client to an important medical appointment or take the child to school. Or sometimes you need to take the child to school so you can talk to the mother. So it's like, is a therapist a friend on top of being a therapist, a driver, sometimes taking the mother to buy diapers so are they helping with hygiene? Are they a nurse more? So it's like I talked to a therapist who actually had to kill a skunk who was very sick and was threatening a child in the middle of a home visit, and may need health. Therapist may need help a disabled or elderly client to get dressed and get out of bed. So the roles are very confusing and very rich.
And I can imagine how this is altered by the expectations of different cultures as well.
Absolutely, because some culture, if you want to join them for a tea or coffee or a food, it would be very insulting. And sometimes they'll expect you to help with the old granny getting dressed or drive the child to
the
medical.
And in another culture, that may be really off limits.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. It is cultural bound. It's good you're adding in. Then the next boundary, it has to do with time. You know, when they come to our offices, to yours or mine, we start at 1 o'clock and I finish at 1:45 sharp. And if you are on top of it, you finish at 1:50 sharp. And even if you slack, you may go to 1:59. But then you better be out of it, end the session so you can start the next session on time. But the sessions in the home office are very fluid because many things happen. If you start driving people around or neighbors coming in and the ex-husband showed up or former wife calls. And so it's like there's so many unpredictable issues, including when the starting time. Sometimes the family is not ready. I've heard about situations where the family just won't open the door for the first 20 minutes when the therapist knocking on the door. Sometimes the therapist is late due to traffic issues in school. Sometimes you drive the child to school first. So when some people are drunk and the session cannot even take place, so timing of the session has completely different flavor when it comes to in-home therapy. Then the next boundary issue is who is present. We have control of who is present when it comes to our offices, but in the in-home sessions, the abusive boyfriend may drop by. People may leave in the middle or decided to answer the phone to go to another room or to watch the favorite show. The neighbors may drop by. Neighbors may be very curious. Who is this woman with this car coming to my neighbor and just knock on the door and not knock on the door and coming in? So it's extremely unpredictable and not always controlled by no means. And therapists need to be kind of flexible about this issue. Of later on, we can talk about confidentiality with these issues of who is present. But who is present is really flexible, unpredictable, and fluid.
I can see how flexibility and fluidity would just be so important for home practice in so many ways.
In so many ways. We talk about time, role, and who is present, and all of it, you're absolutely right. Fluidity and flexibility are just super important, and people who cannot tolerate this kind of fluidity and flexibility are not suited for this kind of work.
And it takes really rapid adaptation many times, I would imagine.
Absolutely. If you're not really good and light on your feet, you're not suited for this kind of work as well. Then comes the issue about suitability that is also relevant to the next boundary issue of self-disclosure. People ask you a lot of personal questions. What do you like to eat? Where are you from? They kind of treat you as friendly guests sometimes. They give you gifts, and then accepting or not accepting is self-revealing. They get to see what car you got there. I've heard therapists telling that the clients notice that they have a baby seat in the car or not having a baby seat. Is the car clean or not clean? Expensive or not expensive? So there are a lot of therapists, intentional or unintentional, planned or unplanned, conscious or unconscious responses that create huge amount of self-disclosure. We also do self-disclosure because the dress code is much less formal in this kind of a setting. Then another boundary issue is the issue of food. Often people are being kind of invited to join the family for meal, and in Chinese or Middle Eastern, Latino, African American culture, to refuse food can be insulting. Then the question is: is eating part of therapy? Does it give the impression of friends? So it's really a complex boundary issue. Then do you go shopping sometimes? You teach mothers what are the basic things healthy basic things to buy for a child. teach them how to store proper meals as part of the treatment plan and evaluation and assessment. So food is an issue that we often don't see much in our offices unless we offer them they give us some cookies or we offer them coffee or tea. And then some people said that they were offered alcohol in a home visit. It's not that unusual. In some culture, you come at 4 or 5 o'clock, it's cocktail time, and grandpa have his cocktail, and they'll be thinking it's be rude not to offer you. Another boundary issue is gifts. How to respond when people being offered gifts. Sometimes it's simple, when children giving you a drawing, and sometimes I talk to many therapists who got inexpensive pornographic gifts that were highly inappropriate. And so what's ethical or unethical, it's kind of, sometimes it's clear and sometimes it isn't.
I could see too where it's about receiving gifts with all of those aspects of consideration, but it would also include the question of gift giving, the therapist giving gifts.
Absolutely. Do you have a child is born? Do you show up to the next session with a gift or somebody who went through a confirmation or bar mitzvah or somebody marriage? So kind of gifts can go on both ends. And again, sometimes some culture would expect you to somehow bring a gift. More boundaries issues. I'll try to be fast with that. There are so many of them. Interferences, sometimes children wandering in the room. You don't have a sense of privacy, uninviting neighbors, friends, strangers. You cannot believe the stories that I've heard from people who do home visits. What kind of unpredictable occurrences happen? Then, of course, interfere dog barking. People talk about fighting dogs in the house, cats all over the place. Needless to say, radio, television, computer, cell phones are at the home kind of people do not even hesitate to watch, continue to watch their favorite TV program, check their emails on their cell phones, etc. What else? Boundaries. Sometimes driving a client, I mentioned, we start drive child to a foster home, to another temporary home, to emergency room, to school, to grocery store, to pharmacy, medical appointment, to the bus stop. I mean, I've talked to many therapists, and so many of them have different stories about some agencies give special insurance for the cars for the therapist to drive. So this would be another kind of risk management, ethical issues that somebody or legal issue that somebody needs to kind of think of. If you drive your clients places, especially if you drive them regularly, there must be some kind of agencies that will cover insurance-wise. That you do it because you're doing it in your line of work. And then there are just numerous opportunities for the client to challenge the boundaries. Sometimes people are dressed inappropriately. Somebody talk about coming to a house and here and the client was in the middle of masturbation to a pornographic video or internet video. They sometimes are not dressed appropriately. Sometimes the smoke dope or the methamphetamine is being cooked in the kitchen. We talked about using cell phone, television, computer, food, type of language. People tend to use the language much more comfortably in their own home, whatever the language is at. And they may ask therapy for a ride, to write a letter, to listen to phone calls, to make a call, to advocate. Sometimes they ask them for money. I mean, they need the money just for the bus, for the child to go to school. How do you kind of resist that? And sometimes therapists open the door and saw a naked client opening the door. Sometimes they were threatened physically by a client or somebody else in the neighborhood. Drunkenness, as I mentioned, scary dog. Some people saw weapons, just a loaded gun sitting on the kitchen table, kind of laying on it, just in full view. Some clients even tried to seduce the therapist sexually. So complicated, rich This is not to deter from doing this important work, but somebody need to think about these boundaries, which is not usually, people are not often trained and are not do not really think, not much literature is being written about it either.
Does this take us to the point where we can talk about the power distribution?
I think you're absolutely right. Everything I said so far will have an impact of the power distributions. That kind of, it's clear that the, if a therapist have some power in the office of perhaps knowledge or information, of course the clients have their own power even in the traditional office, but in the home office, clients have much more power. They're the host. They know the neighborhood. They can decide beginning and end of session. They can control television, who is present, who is not. They can ignore the therapist. They can leave therapy session in the middle. So they have so much more power and control in the home visit than they have in the office. Again, not that they are powerless in the office by no means, but there's definitely much more power that they that can manifest in many ways and control that clients have in the home visit. They can not open the door as they just don't want to talk to you or will not open it for the first 20 minutes. Ask you to come later. And all this is happening on a rather regular basis in home visits with certain populations.
So as I'm listening to you, it's really amazing how much is involved in what the therapist has to quickly adapt to and make decisions about. And one of the things that I think might also be very different in home-based practice rather than in-office practice would be the issue of confidentiality. You referred to self-disclosure earlier, but how could you speak to the issues of confidentiality?
You know, in our offices, we have soundproof rooms and music in the or noise machine in the waiting room. But just imagine you sit in the living room and everything you say can be heard throughout the house. Suddenly the neighbor decide to join cocktail time and you're in the middle of a session. As I mentioned, the abusive former wife or former boyfriend will come in, and how do you deal with confidentiality issues? The neighbors are curious about who is coming into this house with this car at that time. So issues of sound, who a non-client being present or in earshot, and so confidentiality has a different flavor in the home-based therapy or in-home visit in a way that again require thoughtfulness, strategic thinking. Sometimes people go for walks in the park or drive in a car to a local private place in the church to conduct a session. So they have some kind of protect some sense of confidentiality and privacy, which is not a given by no means. And therapists often do not have this kind of control over the situation.
And you've spoken about scary dogs and loaded weapons and maybe an abusive boyfriend showing up. I imagine that there are all kinds of different security and safety issues that have to be considered as well in addition to those things.
You're absolutely right. There are many, many safety issues that I've talked to therapists who do home visits, and there were areas where they couldn't leave the child, the home where they're visiting, because there was shooting in the neighborhood or even next door. So the police just wouldn't allow anybody in and out. So sometimes if you go to a high crime area, to housing projects that are not safe, women are vulnerable in general to in a physical dangerous situation. And sometimes you walk into domestic violence situation. We know from police records that this is one of the most potent and most lethal for police to walk into a situation to try to deal with domestic violence. The volatility is so much more potent. So besides high crime areas, loaded guns, fighting dogs, and there are situations where the child may need to be taken away from the home. And in this case, sometimes police may need to be involved in escorting the therapist and the child if you do an evaluation. Some people get upset if you don't help them enough. Some people get upset if they feel you are threatening that you will take the child away. So they can get hostile and you're on their territory. So this is something that really needs training, need to be really evaluated. Do you send the therapist alone? Is it the right place for a woman to be, a woman therapist to be alone? So this is really, are the weapons present? What kind of neighborhood? Is late evening is appropriate time or not? But sometimes it's the only time to see the entire family. So some people Google for safety issues. Some therapists Google their clients or Google the neighborhood of the clients. So they get a exact view of how to drive in and how to drive out. Some therapists have access to criminal records, which can be very important. And in some situation, it's part of the it can be part of the agency guidelines that therapists may be privy for the criminal record if they need to do it for clinical reasons or for safety reasons. We need to remember therapists have the right to protect the physical safety. This is true for all of us. And we forget about it. We have right to protect ourselves and not necessarily to put ourselves into dangerous situation if we choose not to. We need to screen for weapons, vicious dogs, and other safety issues. And sometimes not coming alone or coming when necessary with even with the police is something that somebody need to think. We talk about women wearing flat shoes, so you're more mobile. Strategically park your car in the direction where you are going to be able to leave, not that you are heading into a dead end or something. It requires a quick assessment. It requires people who knows how to be light on their feet. And traditional social workers are a little bit more adept with that. They have the come with a little bit more history and kind of the right personality for this kind of work, because traditionally this is what social workers have done more than psychologists and MFTs or counselors. So we see kind of very capable, competent social workers doing this kind of work and attending to the safety issues that many other therapists are neither trained, not very suitable for this kind of work. But then we need to remember, sometimes you can do a home visit where there are no safety issues and not necessarily boundary issues. I've done kind of upper class or upper middle class neighborhoods that were safe. And I did a family visit to situations where we sat in the living room and it was as confidential and private as in our offices. So we need to remember there's a whole range of situation, and many of the items that I brought up in this interview may not be present in many of my in-home family therapies that I did with couples. So it was 100% safe and 100% confidential, as far as I can tell. And so it's again depends on the situation.
I'm wondering if there are any other particular screening considerations that you haven't mentioned, or if there are any screening considerations that you haven't mentioned that would be more related to the types of therapy you were just referring to.
When you talk to screening, are you talking about screening clients or screening therapists?
Both.
Okay. So screening is, you're absolutely right. Screening is important on both ends. We screen clients, whatever it takes, and hopefully you get good support in the agency or your supervision or consultation, whoever kind of context you work with, that sometimes to do Google Earth and to get the lay of the land is the right thing. Sometimes criminal records can help. And screening therapists, that's a whole new issue, because you need to get people who are adapt and capable of working on this kind of situation. And many therapists aren't. It's like working, who can work in jails or prisons? Some therapists go past the metal detector and just freak out behind these barbed wires, and they cannot work in a jail situation. So you need to have the right personality, the right experience. And so you need to screen candidates before you send them, and of course, before you start training them even. Some people can really learn to enjoy and to be effective in the situation, and some people just don't fit personally and personality-wise. With the best of training, they will still not be adapt to this kind of work. So screening for the personality and style of people, as well as screening for clients, are both very, very important. And that can be true even without issues of dangerousness. Some people just don't feel comfortable in other people's home. And this has to do with a cultural component. I think that some people with much more wide cultural experiences, or people who travel the world, may be kind of even more comfortable in walking to other cultures, people's homes, and adapting with ease. So it depends kind of on your life experiences as well. So it's not always issues of safety and dangerousness, but it's also, do you feel comfortable walking to people's home and conducting therapy assessment evaluation there? So it has to do with more than danger and safety. It has to do with personality, style, culture, comfort zone of therapist.
And I can really see as you're speaking how it would take a particular type of, almost a subtype of training and supervision, because there are so many essential factors that are unique to this kind of work.
Oh, absolutely. The training is just super important here. It's a unique modality, as you just said, and require ongoing support. It's the uncertainty, the unpredictability, the ambiguity that people face. They need support. I work with some departments that people can debrief on a daily basis and have twice a week a peer support group. Can be so important when people can just get together and say, let me tell you what I encounter. Just venting out.
That would be so important.
Absolutely. So this would be something that part of supervision. There are many ways to supervise people, individual supervision, group supervision, peer supervision, peer support. I advocate that people who started this line of work will go to the first 1, 2, 3, or 4 visit with a mentor, with somebody who has done it many times before. It will help them navigate this complexities of the home visit. Role plays are good. Videos sometimes, if there are any, and there are actually some. Modeling, as I just talked about, senior and junior therapists going together, and then of course teaching, assessment, etc. The debriefing is extremely important in preventing burnout and reduce stress, reduce absenteeism, and definitely we need debriefing when appropriate in traumatic situation, which is not that unusual in some of the population that you work with. So a lot of emphasis on training, screening, and ongoing support, which much more intense than the regular private practice that people have, kind of managed care, or people that have individual private practice outside managed care. Much more, require much more work and intensity and continuity.
You have mentioned social work and cultural sensibilities. What types of therapeutic orientations are found to be most effective when utilized in home-based therapy?
No doubt the social work. Then I'll talk about cultural, people who work with people of different culture can be necessary and important. Family therapies that I mentioned before. CBT, very appropriate in home-based, hospice, needless to say, and slew of medical condition from hospice, nutrition, medication management, and so many other things. The medical field is moving into home-based therapy as a way to save a lot of money and prevent hospitalization. So this is some of the orientations that would be highly conducive.
Now, what about record keeping and billing? Are there any differences with home-based therapy?
Basically, it's not a home. The record keeping should include what's clinical, meaningful, as well as issues of safety and security issue, ethical issues of confidentiality and others, legal issues around a child abuse. So it's basically the same with different codes, which we won't get into that. They have, of course, their own CPT code for home visits.
Would you say that home visits increase or decrease the cost of treatment?
Oh, good. Before we end, I really want kind of to cover these issues. You know, it's an interesting question. It can do both. It can avert ER visits. It can avert psychiatric hospitalization. Sometimes you need less supportive staff and less overhead because you don't have big offices. And sometimes it can be used with telemedicine. So some people say it costs less, but then it can be much more expensive because you have to drive there. It takes much more time, driving costs, driving time. You can see less clients in a day. So it can go really both ways in this regard. It depends what context you use it. Wow, this was a lot for...
And I'm wondering, is there anything else that I have not asked you that you would like to say before we stop?
You know, you covered a lot. You definitely did your homework with this one. I think it's a very rich environment. I think it's a fascinating environment. As a baby boomer growing older, my sense, two things will happen. We'll see more home visits and we'll see more telehealth. So kind of we see these two things are going to grow. And it requires special attention and special personality and definitely a lot of clinical, ethical flexibility.
As I've been hearing you speak to these issues, I just want to say I really take my hats off to those people who are there in the trenches doing that work. It really is challenging and meaningful and so valuable and important.
Beautifully said. Thank you so much,
Nola. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.